a difference. But Henry James pointed out in his philosophy that we did not have in this country a state church. We did not have a true leisure class. And the reviewer said that Mark Twain would have replied, "Why, of course, we don't have a state church, and we don't have a military caste, and we don't have a titled nobility that is a sort of a custodian of our culture." Mark Twain would have said, "We started this country to get away from all of that." Of course. So we may not wonder if the Associate Justice of the Supreme Court, Oliver Wendell Holmes, Jr., saying to Owen Wister, "Henry James, the novels of Henry James, 50 years of polite conversation and nothing doing." The novels of Henry James should have been written on white paper with white ink. A character there in the White House that would not have interested Henry James at all, no mention of him anywhere in his novels. The first humorist to occupy the White House, the first president with a rarely quick and wide sense of humor. He had barnyard stories that couldn't be told in polite company. And then throughout his writings and speeches, there are thin, delicate ironics comparable to passages in the New Testament of the Bible, where the thing that is being said is so terrible in its import that you can't say it in exact words. You have to rely on irony, sarcasm. Sangamon County, an old-time Sangamon County friend of Lincoln's, drifting into the White House. In the course of going over the place, he looked up and said, "Mr. Lincoln, tell me, just how does it feel to be president?" I said, "Well, I guess I'm like that man that the crowd rode out of town on a rail. He said if it wasn't for the honor of it, he'd just as soon walk." In the month of April in 1864, because of blunders, executive and military, and because of corruption, there was a brigadier general who wrote a letter to his wife in which he said, "May God save my country. If there is a God, and if I have a country." The outlook was dark. Lincoln, one night in the White House, read for the Quincy, Illinois lawyer, Orville Browning, read for him from a pamphlet written by a Philadelphia surgeon, Charles Still, where Still was quoting from a pamphlet about how Britain muddles through war. He quoted from a letter of the famous surgeon, Sir James Mackintosh, during the Napoleonic Wars, writing to a friend in Vienna. And in degree, the lines will go for this particular hour. I believe, like you, in a resurrection because I believe in the immortality of civilization. But when, and by whom, and in what form, are questions which I have not the sagacity to answer. A dark and stormy night, a black series of ages may be prepared for our posterity before the dawn that opens the more perfect day. Who can tell how long that fearful night may be before a brighter tomorrow? The race of man may reach the promised land, but there is no assurance that the present generation will not perish in the wilderness. It was that same year that at one time Lincoln said to a military man in the White House, he recited a whole series of disasters, and said, "The bottom is out of the tub, I tell you, the bottom is out of the tub." Hope ran low with him at times. One very odd thing about this man, who is unfathomable, this Abraham Lincoln. One very odd thing, there never has been a president of the United States who, on so curious a number of occasions, wept, had the tears running down his face. And yet, the White House also has never seen a man of such mirth. And it was a Chicago editor writing a campaign biography of him in 1860 who had an odd little sentence as to Lincoln. "He has an exquisite sense of justice. He has an exquisite sense of justice." The only thing about the man that was ever characterized as exquisite was his sense of justice. His face and his figure had a quality of the comic. Here and there through that million-word record of his utterances, odd little sentences that stick out and are of use for today. I had occasion a few days ago to follow a senator of the United States, and he had sketched the world situation as he sees it. And he had told what should be done about it. And I did not try to make any reply to him. I didn't try to correct him. I wouldn't have presumed to. But I did go so far as to quote from Lincoln's opening sentence of the famous House Divided speech in 1858. "If we could first know where we are and whither we are tending, we could better judge what to do and how to do it." If we could first know where we are and whither we are tending, we could better judge what to do and how to do it. Then he went ahead and made that famous House Divided speech. And for years he got letters from people asking him, saying to him, writing to him, "I have read that speech and I'm not sure just what you mean. What did you mean by it?" And Lincoln would answer, "Would you be so good as to write me what you think it means, and I will reply as to whether you are correct or not." There came a time in the writing of that four-volume book, Lincoln, the War Years, that I read hundreds of pages in the Congressional Globe hundreds of speeches made on the floor of the House and the Senate. And after a while it came over me that by far the larger part of them did not know the history that was in the making before their own eyes. We read today what they said then, and we feel sorry for them because they could not read the trend of their times better. Either that, or because they so indulged themselves in utterance. They so enjoyed spouting their opinions that today look so completely ridiculous and lacking in value. There was only a small minority of the members of the Senate and the House whose utterance record stands good today. Lincoln, of course, was one of that minority whose words stand good for today. They were very few. On the southern side, there was Robert E. Lee. You can go to what he said and wrote, and you don't feel sorry for him. He had care and anxiety about what he said and wrote. He wanted to mislead nobody by what he said and wrote. And as a president, as a chief, he had a man who was rash in utterance, who did his thinking with his blood rather than his brain, Jefferson Davis. And the Republican senator from Massachusetts, Charles Sumner, was something of a parallel. I have 18 volumes of the letters and state papers and orations of Charles Sumner of Massachusetts. Bound in buckram, the rag paper and the printing, the typography just beyond criticism. But on nearly every page, as you go through the 18 volumes, on nearly every page, nobody home. What he thought he knew about the issues of the day and what to do about them. Today looks somewhat pathetic. A very curious quality. You can't live with that utterance record of Lincoln.